Next week is the Togiak Refuge Summer Outdoor Skills and River Ecology Float Camp, a rather wordy name, well thanks Alan, for an environmental education camp we put on for area teens that involves taking them out to a refuge river for the week, floating that river in rafts, and a whole host of other outdoor skills and activities tied to the outdoors and the refuge. As I've said before, it's my favorite camp that we put on. Now, it may come as a surprise to you, but planning for a remote fly-in camp that involves river rafting, 6 teens and 3 adults, requires a bit of planning. A great many items need to be considered and remembered for the camp to come off as a success. Forget an item, such as propane for the camp stove, a tent or two, rafting straps or, and it's horrible to consider, the toilet paper, and you go from a fun-filled adventure to potential calamity in the blink of an eye. For example, one year I forgot my sleeping bag. I kid you not. I still don't know how that happened. Fortunately, that kept the potential calamity to the personal level, and it didn't afflict anybody else. But it certainly stole away a little bit from at least my nighttime enjoyment of that particular trip. There's one aspect of each trip that receives a lot of pre-flight attention. The food. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Again, the float camp is an environmental education camp for teens. I have a pet theory about ensuring the success of such camps. Keep them well fed. A well-fed teen is a happy teen, or at least content, which allows them to focus on the activities and topics that you're trying to share. To that effect, I try to provide a hot breakfast and a hot supper every day, as well as copious amounts of snacks throughout the day. Lunch is the one meal provided that doesn't receive as much care and preparation, as we're usually en route from one night's campsite to the next. Even so, this recipe for camp cooking has always seemed to work well. Camp cooking and camp food can be many things to many people, though there are some time-tested favorites. Honestly, for me, it depends on what I'm doing. Cooking for the kids is something I put a bit of effort into, and they seem to appreciate it. On the other hand, if I'm camping while hunting and it's just me and maybe a buddy, I might not cook at all, but instead eat cold, ready-to-eat foods, as I'm hungry, because I'm there to hunt, and that's where my time goes. For some folks, camp cooking necessarily means certain foods and certain items, and those items are a part of the aura, the aesthetics of the experience, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. When I say items, I mean an actual percolating coffee pot, a Dutch oven, and a cast iron skillet. I've been in such camps and used such items, and they certainly can add to the experience greatly, and terrific foods can be cooked in them, particularly the Dutch oven, that cannot be created otherwise. Ever have fresh donuts in camp? It's been a few years since I've made any, but a little oil in the bottom of a Dutch oven, some biscuits out of a tube, a hole through the middle of each, a few minutes cooking time and some sugar to roll them in, well that's my preference anyway, and you've got hot, fresh donuts. Pair those with hot coffee, and you've got a mighty fine breakfast. A brief word about Dutch ovens. These started to show up across Europe in the 1600s. The Dutch were more advanced in their production methods and were able to produce a smoother surface, which resulted in their better quality pan being imported to other parts of Europe. In 1704, a Brit by the name of Abraham Darby spent time in the Netherlands studying the production processes. 4 years later, he patented a casting procedure similar to the Dutch process, and he began to produce Dutch ovens for Britain and the American colonies. From this beginning comes the name that's still used over 3 centuries later. Dutch ovens went over big in the colonies and across the American frontier, as our country came into being and grew. They were, and still are, prized because of their versatility, whereas they can be used for boiling, baking, stews, frying, roasting, and just about any other way to cook you'd care to think of. Lewis and Clark carried them, and mountain men made them famous. Even today, the Dutch oven is the official state cooking pot of Texas, Utah, and Arkansas. They have been a cooking staple of the Boy Scouts of America for nearly a century, and they still retain a strong following across Alaska. Alas, I have to confess, we do not use a Dutch oven for our float camp. The reason? Weight, which is always at a premium for fly-in trips. Everyone has their favorites when it comes to food types and preparation. I thought I'd share a few of the things that we do with our camps that have served us well. In providing hot suppers, two that always seem to be popular are spaghetti and chicken noodle soup. The spaghetti is pretty self-explanatory. The chicken noodle soup is made with egg noodles, chicken bouillon, spices, and canned chicken breast meat. It cooks up quickly, it's tasty, and it can be made in large quantities pretty easily. I also serve garlic bread with both meals. Cut into thin slices, the garlic bread browns up quickly in a frying pan. A favorite for breakfast is breakfast burritos, using soft flour tortilla shells, scrambled eggs, cheese, and whatever type of meat you prefer. I often use bacon bits. We also normally have one night with cheeseburgers. I'm a fan of padding out my own patties over prefab burgers, and I like to use something I don't see a lot of people do. For the kids who want a cheeseburger, as opposed to a hamburger, I use spray or squeeze cheese. Some of the kids look at me funny before they try it, but nobody does afterwards. The other part to keeping them well fed is to have a good supply of snack items on hand. The most popular items we've found year after year at our camps include mini candy bars, apples, bananas, fruit snacks, and Rice Krispie treats. Another neat time saver is that I buy the bulk packages of pre-cooked bacon. This stuff tastes fine, and by already being cooked, you can throw it in a pan for just a few minutes to add heat, and it's like serving fresh cooked bacon. Always a welcome addition to any breakfast. I should also note that if you want to keep teens happy, don't neglect to bring the proper ingredients for s'mores. I did that once. Never again. S'mores are those traditional treats made around the campfire consisting of marshmallows and chocolate heated and placed between graham crackers. S'mores are something of a more recent camp addition, and by more recent I mean within the last century. According to what I read, the first recorded version of them is found in the publication Tramping and Trailing with the Girl Scouts, published in 1927, and they show up in a number of scouting and camping-related publications in the decades after that. One of my favorite authors, outdoor humorist Patrick McManus, has said of s'mores that kids may consume up to a half dozen or more with no ill effects, but more than two is considered a lethal dose for adults. A new camp thing I only recently became aware of is roasted Twinkies. I kid you not, and no, you did not hear that wrong. Roasted Twinkies. It's just what it sounds like. Swap out the marshmallow at the end of your stick for a Twinkie, and you're good to go. While I'm sure many people have tried this idea, and perhaps even some of you already do this, the idea was introduced to me within the past year by my friend Steve Ito of Dillingham. Steve is a diehard proponent of roasting Twinkies, and after trying it, I can see why. It completely changes the flavor, in a very good way. The trick to a good Twinkie roasting is that it requires patience. You simply cannot rush the process. We'll be taking Twinkies for the kids to roast on this year's float camp. Oh, and by the way, if you ever get a chance to share a camp with Steve, you'll have those Twinkies to look forward to. Plus, Steve is a phenomenal storyteller. Camp food and camp cooking can be such a big part of the camping experience. If you need proof of that, take a look at any of the many books by Patrick McManus. Pat's forte is outdoor humor, specifically short stories. Far and away, most of his stories relate to hunting, fishing, or camping, and many of them tie to camp cooking and food, such as the level of importance it holds with regards to being outdoors. As I pack this week, for a half dozen teens and a couple of adults, I'll be thinking about some of the many elements to his stories relating to camp cooking, such as What You Got Stew, which is a stew made of whatever odds and ends the campers happen to have in the way of food, or of hash, a catch-all term for a goopy food mixture that can come in many colors. According to McManus, stay away from it if it's green. Only a fool eats green hash. Also, be sure to avoid freeze-dried foods. It's proof of one's manhood that you carry your food with all its water still in it. To quote one of his stories, a man could ruin his reputation for life by getting caught on a pack trip with a dried apple. If you wanted apples, brother, you carried them with the water still in them. Really, all I need to do is make sure that whatever I buy plenty of it. Because as I have said, a well-fed teen is a happy teen, and that makes the rest of the trip that much easier. Whatever you prefer in the way of foodstuffs for your outdoor ventures, well, more power to you. Just get outside and get that cooking fire fired up while there's still summer to do so. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.